I want to welcome J.C. Hobbs to this webinar. J.C. holds the position of Associate Extension Specialist in Agricultural Economics Department at Oklahoma State University. His areas of emphasis are in income tax management, farm business management, farm transition planning, and estate taxes and planning. He is the coordinator of the Oklahoma State University Farm and Business Tax Schools, and also teaches agricultural tax issues. I know JC conducts a number of webinars and workshops for producers. In addition, JC is a member of the National Farm Income Tax Education Task Force, like Guido and I are, and this group provides input for the Farmer's Tax Guide, publication 225, published by the IRS, and that group also develops some useful tax-related information for farmers and ranch businesses. JC also hails from a farmer and ranch operation, which allows him an even greater understanding of production ag. JC, I want to welcome you to the program, and we look forward to your presentation.
Thanks, Jeff. Welcome, everyone. As mentioned here, we're looking at tax planning, tax management opportunities that the new law is going to provide, plus then some typical things that we've been using in the past. But when we look at end-of-year tax management, it has to make economic sense. We don't want the tax tail wagging the business dog. If it doesn't work, it's not going to make economic sense. It does not benefit us. We'll talk about some tools that work prior to year end, and then we'll also look at some tools that after the year tax year is closed that will allow us then to make some decisions that will impact the tax bill, the tax bite that would have already been in place. Income averaging is one of those that comes into play after we've ended the tax year, we've figured out where we're at. If we have extremely high income, farm income averaging works well because it allows us to take the current year income to a high level and move it backwards to the three prior years and fill up unused tax brackets or tax bracket amounts from those prior years and consequently lower our overall tax bite. So in this example, we have 2018 income that's higher than normal. Looking backwards, we had $20,000 in the 25% bracket that was not used. 25 and 16, 30 and 17. So we can take $60,000 from 2018 and move it backwards, adding $20,000 to each of those prior years and lower our current year tax bite by that amount, move it to the lower tax brackets, pay a lesser tax. However, it does not reduce the self-employment tax. It does not reduce the net investment income tax for high-income folks, very high-income, or the phase-out of personal exemptions, itemized deductions, which most of those have been suspended, so really not probably having that much impact there. But the SE tax is definitely not going to be adjusted for farm income averaging. Another thing we can do if we have a lot of income, large amount, prepaying expenses. We buy things in the current year, 2018, that's going to be used in the following year. Now, there's some rules that have to be followed. It cannot be a deposit. It has to be an actual payment. We have to be able to prove that it was for a valid business purpose, not just for tax management purposes, and that cannot materially distort income. So it has to be reasonable, has to be thought through. So reasonable expenses allowed if for a business purpose. Now, prepaid expenses, there's some rules that apply, and these are primarily discussed in the Farmer's Tax Guide, and we're going to hit on them a little bit, but if you need to go into more detail, pick up the Farmer's Tax Guide. That's at Pub 225, and it goes into a much better explanation and much more detail. But basically, if we look at it, in the whole, deduction is going to be limited to 50% of other deductible non-prepaid items. So essentially, you look at the total expenses for the year. Look at the amount that were not of the prepaid source. Compare that to what was prepaid to be used next year. If that amount is 50%, then it's going to be limited. Now, here's some things that wipes out that limitation. If we're a qualified farm-related taxpayer and we meet one of the three following items, main home on the farm, our principal occupation is farming, or a member of the family that meets one or two of those, either of those above items, then we can avoid having to work with that 50% rule. Another thing that happens, if it's due to extraordinary circumstances, drought or flood, where we cannot, let's say a flood occurs and we can't apply the fertilizer that we bought, or there's a drought and we buy feed and we sell the cows and we don't need the feed, then that does not apply, so you don't have to worry about using what was purchased because, again, extraordinary circumstances cause that prepaid to not be used. Consequently, all we have to do is show proof that that occurred to us on the tax return. Another option is deferred payment contracts. Now, these deferred payment contracts, you've got to look at having everything in an arm's length transaction. You cannot have right to the commodity after it is delivered. You can't call it back and say, oh, I decided I didn't want to sell the wheat. I'm going to use it for seed wheat. Nope. Once it's done, it is done. We also have to make sure we don't receive or we have to avoid constructive receipt, not receiving that income until that specified date. So the contract has to be in place. We cannot advance or get the advance payment. It has to be paid after the year end in order for this to work. So basically, we're getting rid of the commodity using current higher prices, and we will then receive a payment after year end. Consequently, we move the income for cash basis farmers. This works. We move the income into the following year because we recognize cash when it is received. Crop insurance, disaster payments. Now, a lot of these create some very unique situations. Crop insurance, if it is for truly replacement of the crop lost, not the revenue side, if it is for crop loss damages, you can generally report the repayment in the year you received. However, you can elect to postpone that to the following year. This is the crop loss, not the revenue. If we use a cash method of accounting, if we receive the proceeds in the same year the crop was damaged, and we don't receive the crop insurance proceeds the year later, then we can't postpone it. It's just going to show up then. Under normal practices, we normally would have sold that crop in the year after the damage occurred. This is particularly true in some of the corn-growing areas where we sell after the first of the year for parts of the crop. That works quite well. We just have to show normally we would sell 50% of the crop in the year harvest and that we would sell part of it in the following year. Then we can then split the payment of the crop insurance between the 2 years. So it gives us some great opportunities for these crop insurance. Same thing with disaster payments. Disaster payments, if they're the same way, if the were received in the year the crop would have normally been sold, you'd report it that year. If we split the crop sales, we can split the disaster payment proceeds. Now, weather-related sales of livestock. There's two sets of rules here, but basically we're looking at weather conditions such as flood, drought, any other weather-related condition that causes a shortage of water or feed to cause the sale of livestock in a year that we would not have normally sold them. So we're looking at sales in excess of normal. So we can postpone recognition of income from the sale proceeds of animals that would have been sold in a later year, but due to these weather-related conditions, we have to sell them this year. What this allows us to do is to avoid the bunching of income. Now, like I said, there's two different rules here. These two apply to sales. Again, keep in mind, excess of normal has to be weather-related. The first one applies to all livestock except poultry, and it essentially looks at deferring income until the following year on those animals that would have sold this year that would have been sold in the following year. The second one applies to livestock, again, other than poultry, held for draft, breeding, or dairy purposes. So these aren't market animals. These are animals that we've got in the herd that we keep for a while. And it's called involuntary conversion. You can see the code section 1033E there. It applies if we have the replacement in mind, or so we're going to buy these animals back. So we're selling breeding cows. Our purpose is to reduce the herd, give us some relief on the grass. And after a certain point of time, usually 2 years after the conversion, then we are required to buy them back. So if we're going to buy them back, we use the 1033E deferral. If we're going to just report, well, what would have been normally sold in the following year, we use the 4051E, which just moves income from 1 year to the next. So the first one, deferral of income, it's the extra animals. So how does it apply? Well, our principal business must be farming. We have to use the cash method of accounting. We have to show the animals would normally have been sold in the following year. So we have to go back and look at our average sales from prior years to kind of get an idea of what normal sales would be, and then prove that due to the weather-related conditions, now we've sold more than that, and those animals that were sold in excess of normal, that income would be allowed to be moved to the following year. But the rule says that area has to be declared eligible for federal disaster assistance, federal disaster area. So the 451E does require federal disaster declaration. The other conversion does not require a federal disaster declaration, but we just have to be able to prove that a drought existed. Must plan to repurchase animals within 2 years at the end of the drought cycle. So when the drought breaks, we have 2 years to buy them back. So if you're looking at sales that occurred in 2018 due to drought or flooding where we don't have the animals, you have to replace those animals sold, the excess number, by the year 2021. It's not a head-per-head requirement. It's dollar-for-dollar. We may have sold 20 head, but we don't have to buy back 20 head. We have to buy back the amount that was sold at that point in time. If the drought declaration continues, it can be extended from 2 years to 4 years. Now, in western Oklahoma, I've got a couple of counties that the drought, extreme, exceptional levels have been going on for the last 13 years. And it took place again this year. So they've still got 4 years from the date to sell back or buy back animals they sold 13 years ago. Again, it has to be eligible for disaster assistance to get that 4 year replacement period. Otherwise, it's just two. Involuntary conversions. Well, it's the same thing. We're looking at the draft breeding held for any period of time, weather related condition causing the sale. The gain is what we're moving. The gain realized from the sale, we elect to postpone it. We use the sale proceeds to buy replacement animals within that time period, dollar for dollar. By doing so, we simply take the gain realized from the sale, we postpone it, and we roll that into the value of the new animals. And the new animals must have the same purpose as those that were sold, dairy for dairy, breeding for breeding. And the new animals then carry the same value or basis that they would have carried on the existing return when the drought was sold, or drought occurred. So we're not recognizing the income, we're simply deferring it, and it is deferred until those replacement animals are sold at a later date. So when does the drought period expire? Well, here's the rules, but basically you've got to look at the area that we're involved in, and you've got to look at the four-year replacement, and Oklahoma's designations, like I said, have been going on for a considerable period of time in certain areas. So basically, you're looking at quite a few years to make this repurchase. The drought-free year, that's that first year that we have an area that's completely wet. In other words, that particular county or area didn't hit the drought declaration for that year. So then we start that point rolling forward, and we have, if it was a federal declared disaster area, 4 years to rebuy them back. Again, that's exceptional, extreme, severe drought in that particular area. Now, what's the applicable region? Guido made a statement earlier that the hurricane only affected the county. Well, for these drought-related conditions, disaster or weather-related sales, it looks at the county that's involved or counties that are involved, and any county that borders that particular county, so contiguous to that county, that becomes our region that we look at. So ways to look at also then increasing taxable income. These were the previous were primarily ways to reduce. Now we're going to look at some items that will increase our taxable income in the current year. One of those being if we sell grain or livestock in 2018 that could have been sold in 2019. I want to look at that very closely because sometimes selling livestock, we may not be at the proper weight to capture the greatest benefit in terms of market. Well, the decision to manage taxable income over managing the business, again, is coming back to that tax tail wagging the business dog. It may not make economic sense, but if it does, this is an alternative that will work. Also, delay paying expenses in 2019. So we've got some big expenses that pop up right now. Working with the dealer or parts dealer, et cetera, may be able to talk to them into postponing you paying that until after the first of the year. Another way of increasing fees, we're collecting fees, rents, accounts in 2018 that would be normally paid in 2018. Also delaying payments on repairs until 2019. Again, the big issue, make sure it makes, or be sure it makes economic sense before you do these things. If, again, you don't want to do something that causes problems later. Also, needed repairs on equipment. Make them now instead of later. This was something I used to do. I had a combine operation. A lot of times, I'd wait until the following year to make the repairs. If I had a large amount of taxable income, I'd make the repairs before Christmas and have it ready to go way early. Also, paying accrued interest on loans. Now, this is not the amount that we expect to pay. This is actual accrued interest that is due if we paid the loan off today. So paying accrued interest works. Prepaying interest does not. Also, another tool to use is the development of retirement plans or contributing to existing retirement plans. Primarily, we're looking at traditional IRAs, SEP IRAs, simples, where the payment actually allows us a tax deduction. So those items do allow us to reduce our taxable income or gross income. They are deducted from that before we come to adjusted gross income. So there are great tools available, not only for current, but they also provide retirement income at a later date. So, again, if you look at that from a planning point of view, it's a great opportunity, something that should be thought of and not passed up. So we get into tax planning and management. It's a year-round, everyday job. We basically need to start looking at this at the first of the year, what we're going to do, and before the end of the year, do our planning, do our calculations, and determine exactly what it is we need to do. And to do so properly, we need to have a basic understanding of the tax law. So with this new tax law, it may require some study. When you don't know, ask questions. The what if, rather than, well, this is what I did. So when you take that situation to your accountant, well, this is what I did, now fix it. A lot of times that cannot be fixed. You're going to have to live with it. Professional advice may be needed, or probably most often will be needed. And year-end tax planning, always useful. What you're trying to accomplish is the leveling of taxable income over the lifetime, I probably should have said lifetime of the business. If we can level taxable income, keep everything level over time from one year to the next, we will minimize the overall tax bite. Remember what Guido showed us in the early part of this thing. As you look at getting into those higher tax brackets, if we can manage to stay in the 22 realm, over that life, we pay a lot less in taxes than if we have large swings from one year to the next of our taxable income and total tax paid. So with that, I'll turn it back to Jeff. If you have questions, fire away.
Thanks, JC. You and Guido provided some very useful information to our audience. I know I was paying rapt attention. You know, I believe you made a great point in that a person's management of his or her tax liability should not be the sole reason for making a decision. And I think both of you used a key word today in both your presentations that is essential to people dealing with their taxes, and that is the word plan or planning. Plan for how to implement the tax code in your up business as opposed to, whoops, I did this. I know many tax preparers have gotten calls on January 1st for the prior year, and it's too late at that point in time in many cases.